And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their minds. So they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast, the podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast.
By the way, the podcast is sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day.
Baby Shark.
No. I thought the gold this week was going to be the screaming pug.
Oh, no, that's later.
Baby Shark.
Yeah, I think that Baby Shark basically trumps everything.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, Baby Shark got in my head all day yesterday. Yeah. I would be sitting there going, doo, 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 doo.
Baby Shark.
Doo, 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 doo.
So awful.
Baby Shark.
Doo, 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 doo.
Baby Shark. Doo, 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 doo.
Ah, yes.
Hi, Robert.
Our guest today is Robert K. Orman, country music expert and fine fellow.
And shark hunter.
Baby Shark.
And he joins us today. Sorry to put you through this, yeah. Robert. Don't know how long you're going to last.
I can put up with the best of them.
Okay. So,
you've
but
been
we're
warned.
The worst.
So, you know, you have seen a lot of changes over the years in country music. I mean, we have seen you went through bro country. We went through...
Are we still? Are
That's
we done
recent.
With that? Are we still going through that?
Yeah, no, I'm still hearing a couple songs that are could be classified as
bro-y.
Bro-y.
Bro-ish.
Yeah,
bro-ish.
Brosome. They're brosome, dude.
What's the biggest fad, I guess, that you didn't think was going to stick around but did?
Americana music. I think that outgrowth of country that was all those singer-songwriter guys and quasi-outlaw people.
Yeah.
And it turned into a real genre.
Yeah. And now, when you say Americana, are you meaning like what? Like, give us an example of what you think that's Americana.
Like some artist.
Steve Earle.
Okay.
Lyle Lovett. Emmylou Harris is now an Americana artist. Willie is an Americana artist. Johnny Cash is now an Americana artist. I mean, all these acts that were vintage country who weren't played on country radio are now Americana artists. And they have their own award show and their own genre and their own charts and their own thing.
So... Like, I'm a big folk guy.
Me too.
I love, like, the...
Would folk now be what we would consider, what we would call Americana?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too.
Like, James Taylor would be an Americana artist.
God, yes. James Taylor and Dan Fogelberg.
Yeah, all those guys. Did you know that Dan Fogelberg lived here when he wrote all those hits?
No, I did not.
He lived out in Pegram.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. He was a Nashvillean.
Didn't know that.
Robert is a country music historian and expert. He also, I think, knows everything about Nashville. Didn't you do something for the Nashville Public Library about like history that is in
that exhibit,
all around us?
That was called Hiding in Plain Sight. It was things in Nashville that you go right by, but you don't know that Dolly Parton lived there. You know, like that kind of stuff.
I always, you know, you see like the people who do tours and that kind of thing. I always think it's important. Bubba said this a long time ago. Most people need to get out and be tourists in their own city.
And this doesn't mean whether you live in a big city or a small city. Wherever you are, you should take the time to learn your community because there's history everywhere, and there's great stories, and there's great things to see, and we take it all for granted.
I do it all the time.
There.
I do it all the time. I went down to Lower Broadway, and I hit every one of those star bars a couple weeks ago just to see what was going on. And you know what? You can't build too many of them. They're all full.
That's true.
Yeah.
I did notice
John Rich is full.
I did this.
Dirk is full.
I did this.
Alan Jackson is full.
I think it was 3 weeks
Blake
ago.
Blake Shelton is full.
I feel like some of the older, more established honky-tonks might suffer, though. Like, no, they're not as full. The Laylas and the Roberts.
Tootsies.
And you know.
Even a friend of mine was at Tootsies the other day. He was visiting Nashville, and he was posting pictures from inside, and he said it was empty because then when he went down the street to Dirk's, Bentley, and John Rich, that's where everybody was.
Where everybody
right.
is.
Florida-Georgia line.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a line outside of there, you know, and this was on like a Wednesday night or a Tuesday night. It was like not even, it wasn't even the weekend. Hello.
Patrick half fell out of his
tiny
chair.
And I
Patrick sits in the, like, the counters in here are all tall height.
That's right. I bring my chair height from my office because it's more comfortable. I'm going to sit in here for 45 minutes. I don't want to sit on a metal stool. So I prefer to sit in this chair.
Yeah, I saw, yesterday, I guess, that Luke Bryan is going to be opening up a place on Lower Broadway.
Six stories, right.
And
is there a six-story building downtown? Or is
But he's going to have the only rooftop sushi.
Yes. Which I thought was fascinating.
That's the selling point. That was the fun fact about it. Rooftop sushi. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
He'll have four stages for performers, but you can get sushi on the rooftop.
Is this true?
Wow.
Yep. Is this true?
Because when I think sushi, I think Luke Bryan. That's right. I definitely. Hey y'all, y'all want to come get some sushi?
I guarantee you, Luke didn't know what sushi was until
otherwise known as bait.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. We fish with this stuff, but you can also eat it. So apparently,
who all has it now? You got Luke's place. You have Dirk's has a place down.
Alan Jackson, John Rich, Florida Georgia Line, Jason Aldean.
Blake Shelton. Kid
Rock is opening one.
They're all bar owners in
Nashville. Or they've lent their name to them.
Yeah.
That's eight.
And then there's the George Jones Museum and the Johnny Cash Museum down there and the Patsy Cline
Museum.
Okay,
how is it that Toby Keith didn't open up an I Love This Bar? Because he like started the star bar thing.
I don't think Toby likes us.
Nashville or us? Or both.
Just I think Nashville.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he's kind of...
First couple times he came here, the town basically spanked his hiney and sent him home.
Why?
Because they didn't like his songs.
They did that with Garth, too.
Yeah, Garth tried out for everybody. So that was my era.
What is the era? That's
when I went to work for the newspaper. That was like the 80s and the 90s. When like Garth, Tim McGraw, Vince Gill, Alan Jackson, you know, Travis Tritt, all those... acts. That's when country exploded. That may be the most significant change I've seen, is that country music became a profit center for the entire music business, whereas before it had been a tiny little niche market, and now it makes bazillions of dollars. And that was that era, that 80s and 90s breakthrough of all those artists that did it.
Yeah, and they're still at it.
And
they're still touring.
Tim McGraw and Garth Brooks are still very much with us.
Yeah, I mean, when Reba kind of went away and then, like, she kind of went away and did TV and acting and that kind of stage stuff, and I thought, well, she's not coming back.
She did, though.
And she did, and came back
big. I went and saw her in Annie Get Your Gun on Broadway, and she was funny. I mean, really funny, like, ha-ha, Lucille Ball funny. She was really, really good in it.
I find Reba, people always ask us, Who's you know, they don't want to know who's the best person to interview. Who's the worst person to interview? And I don't really answer that, but I will say that the hardest to interview for me personally is Reba, because she answers everything that you ask, but she does it in...
She's Kurt.
She's like very, bullet points.
Very direct. You know,
Don Williams was the original Kurt. Don Williams was, yep.
Yep.
Nope. Help me out here.
Oh, wow.
Well,
for years, I tried to get Don Williams to come and be on the show, because I'm a huge Don Williams fan. Yeah. I mean, that's like, Don Williams to me hung the moon.
So were you excited when you won your Grammy? Yep.
Okay. Well, he wouldn't come see us.
No, he wouldn't do it. Said country radio had forgotten him, so he was forgetting them. And I'm like,
and we're country radio. We're trying to remember you. Yeah. We're trying to bring you back and get your name out there.
I forget no one.
Yeah. I had a conversation. This is maybe a little too deep, but I had a conversation with some friends in the music industry during CMA Fest about there's a point in every artist's career, whether it's country music or whatever, there's a point at which you stop being a creator of new art and become a performer of existing art. Okay, there's a point at which Garth Brooks realized, you know, people might listen to my new music, but when I go out on tour, they want to hear me sing the hits. And there's a transition for everybody. Maybe it's after five albums. Maybe it's after 10 years. Some people like Tim McGraw and George Strait can keep putting out new stuff for 25 years. But everybody has that point at which they have to turn that corner. And either you accept it
or you go from not having enough songs that people know to fill an hour to having too many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
But if you refuse to accept that, okay, I'm one of the guys who goes out and sings the songs everybody already knows, and this is how I make my living now, and this is what people want from me, and this is why people love me. If you refuse to accept that, you can become very bitter. Merle Haggard was very bitter for the last 20 years of his life because radio wouldn't play his new music. Don Williams was very, very bitter because radio wouldn't play his new music. But you know what? You had like 20 years. Like, you had 20 years of getting new songs on the radio to the point they became huge hits, and you sold millions of records, and you have millions of fans who love you.
But they don't want it to end.
The Grand Ole Opry stars are all like that. They've accepted who they are, and they know they have to go out there and sing the hit that everybody knows, and, you know, that's what they do.
John Conley, rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, rose-colored glasses every Saturday night.
If he doesn't sing it, I'm upset. You know, here's something.
Are you going to go on tour as Dolly Parton and not sing I Will Always Love You? I don't think so.
Yeah, but
Big D and I spent some time with Jerry Reed right before he passed away. And he was one of those guys, you know, we told him about Don. We're like, hey, do you have an in? Because during that era, we were trying.
Yeah, they were in the movies together. Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, is there any kind of way you can? And he said, man, look, you know, no. And he said, some people are cool with it. Some people aren't. He goes, I look at it like this. I had a great career, and now I have another career. I have my radio career, and now I have my touring career.
Right.
And he said, I just go out and I play for people, and they pay money to hear me go out and sing them the songs and the hits, the ones they love, and they're happy. And he said, that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And he
That's
was
the
totally
only attitude cool. to
And
have.
then he came back and said, you know, here's the thing. I can't get mad at the younger guys for taking my spot on the radio, because at one point I was the young guy taking someone else's spot exactly. on the radio.
There's always going
to
be that.
I forget who it was. Somebody said to me, you know, I ran up and down those roads for so many years, and he said, let the young guys do it for a while now. You know, I'm fine with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. The fact that Garth Brooks gets in every show and says, you paid your hard-earned money. When I see my favorite artists, I want to hear the old stuff. So we're going to play the old stuff. Like, if Garth's doing it, y'all sit down.
Yeah.
Like, follow him.
By the way, don't say anything bad about Garth in front of her.
Yeah.
You don't know. Carson
will attack you.
She will stab you with anything that's nearby.
I interviewed Allie, his daughter, for my podcast, for Children of Song, and she was really good.
Yeah.
And she sang and, you know, did her thing. It was the week she graduated from Belmont University.
When is the last time we heard Garth Brooks actually sing Unanswered Prayers? Like, I haven't heard him sing it.
I went to a very small private Garth show. There was like 150 people there in January. Patrick was kind enough to give me his spot.
That's right.
And he started to sing it, and he's used to the audience singing, and in the middle of it, he's like, I'm not sure I remember the words anymore. And he did. He kind of hiccuped.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't sung it in
It's been
decades.
So long since he had to do it.
Yeah.
Because why doesn't he sing it?
He sings the first verse and then he just passes
then
it
the
off.
Audience.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate it too.
I hate that.
It's the worst.
I saw an artist, I forget who it was, posted something on Twitter or Instagram, and it was like, thank you so much. This
for
song is really,
my song.
Really taking off. And it's a video of, you know, 5,000 people singing the words of this song, and he's just standing there. I'm like, oh my gosh, I would demand a fraction of my money back because I didn't hear you sing a thing. You just sat out there, and it was an ego rush.
I saw a tribute band the other night, a Skinner tribute concert, and they did it with
Freebird. It's not even their song.
I'm like, there's only 200 people here, and they don't know the words well enough to sing this. You have got to sing the song.
We
got to
do that at karaoke bar. Just get out there and like, oh, come on, everyone. You know the words.
You know
come
it.
On. Yeah. Sometimes
you get up,
you I think. That's right. Come on, guys.
And you trail off. You always just start the beginning of each line.
Four.
You know?
Yeah. Who's your favorite? If you could sit down and just go fishing, I don't know, whatever you like to do, with some artist of any era.
Ooh.
And it could be any genre,
too. I don't really
too.
Love them enough to spend that much time with any of them.
Amen.
Wow.
Me either.
Artists
are
weird. I did Brenda Lee's book with her because she doesn't know she's Brenda Lee. She has no idea who she is. And I'm working with Dwayne Eddy, Mr. Twangy Guitar, because he's such a nice guy. But most of them, I wouldn't want to spend that amount of time with.
Why?
Dolly, I guess I could hang
I think
with.
That would shock so many fans.
Yes.
I mean, like,
I'm
sure
shocked.
If I'm listening to the podcast or watching along on Facebook, I'm going, wait a minute, you're saying that you wouldn't want to hang out and spend the day fishing with one person?
Oh, I do. I mean, I have friends that are quote-unquote stars, you know, people that I hang with, but it's because I knew them before they were who they are.
Right.
You know, people, like I worked at the when I worked at the Country Music Hall of Fame, Kathy Mateo worked there as a tour guide, and Trisha Yearwood was a receptionist, and Doug Green of Riders in the Sky was down in the archives with me, and we all were friends before any of them had careers, or I had a career for that matter. You know, so those people, Steve Earle, I knew when he was a puppy, just hanging out on Music Row. And so those people, I don't count because those aren't stars to me. Those are just people who became stars.
Sure.
Okay, well, what about of the, let's go to the...
KT Oslin's another one. I knew her when she was a chorus girl in New York, you know.
So. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Wow.
She was in My Fair Lady, not My Fair Lady, Hello Dolly, West Side Story, and Promises, Promises.
The movies or the actual...
The actual Broadway shows.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy.
She was a little old chorus girl.
You know, the best Kathy Mateo. I listened to a Kathy Mateo song. I haven't listened to Kathy Mateo in years until about 2 weeks ago. And I listened to that. I don't... It never...
455
Rocket? 455
Rocket.
Love it.
The kind of police drive. It's the best... And the way
you
she
have to have a manual transmission to listen to that song
because though. She sings it the way she mimics you shifting gears,
right.
And she that's the way she sings the song. Mm-hmm. And it's a song about she got an old Oldsmobile and right. It was beat up, but it had this huge engine in it. And she would go hang out and race these guys and beat them. And it's just. So
he
uniquely written.
Much.
It's just so cool. Man.
I have associated so much of my childhood with those big old cars. My mother had four brothers, Chubb, Luther, Corny, and Bill.
Wait.
You have to go okay. back with the Let's Animaniacs name
That's
here.
Fantastic.
We're the Animaniacs.
What's the name?
Mom's name? Brothers' names?
Chubb, Corny, Luther, and Bill.
Chubb, Corny, Luther, and Bill.
That's like a Hee-Haw sketch. Yeah. Seriously.
I listened to that show.
And they all drove these big cabin cruiser cars because they would go around servicing the jukebox. My grandma had a jukebox chain, and they worked for her. And you'd go around these bars, and depending on what bar you were in, you were stocking hillbilly records or R&B records or rock and roll records or polka records or pop records or whatever. And you'd go in there, clean out the jukebox, put new 45s in, and they all drove these big cars. Because they had to drive for miles and miles between all these joints in West Virginia and Pennsylvania. And all my childhood is tied up in that.
Think about that. They used to have to go drive to the location and physically take out the old 45 record mm-hmm. and put in the new current song or whatever
right,
it was.
The new Beach Boys record or whatever, yeah. And that was my childhood. And then there was a store, too, the record store. And so... That's how I got into this whole thing, was just like being addicted to records.
So
she,
how did you
she
get
would pay
to...
me, for to clerk in the record store, she paid me and used jukebox records off the jukeboxes, 45s.
Goodness.
And I still have them.
I see Patrick over there.
You still have them? So jealous right
Oh,
now.
You still have them? That's huge. We have a jukebox.
I've never thrown anything away.
What is that jukebox record that you have? A little 45 of...
I have Travis Tritt, Whiskey Ain't Working, and Here's a Quarter, and I ordered their old jukebox records.
Right.
And because I knew he was coming in. So my thing is, when I know one of these guys who existed in the era of vinyl is coming in, I go and I find whatever I can find and I ask him to sign it. And that's
you go over to Jack White's and he's still into vinyl.
Yeah, but I couldn't find any Travis Tritt records except for these old jukebox records, and they're perfect. It's, mm-hmm. it's I think Whiskey Ain't Working is one of the best songs ever, but I'm also obsessed with songs about drinking because your woman left, which I think are the perfect. I think that's the perfect country music song. I think Charlie Daniels' "Drinking My Baby Goodbye" is the greatest country music song ever written.
It's a really happy kind of.
It's very upbeat.
Yeah.
It's got a blazing fiddle solo. It's about
pour
drinking.
Me another one. I'm finished with the other one. I'm drinking my baby.
It's goodbye. About drinking because your woman left, which is an essential topic, and it's the rhyme scheme. Is like Shakespearean. It's impossible.
Shakespearean.
It is. It's A A B C C B. It follows that in the
what
chorus.
What are you talking about? Super nerd.
I'm with you.
He
Wait,
understands.
What?
It's a rhyme scheme thing. The first line rhymes with the second line and doesn't rhyme with the third. Then the fourth line rhymes with the fifth line, and the sixth line rhymes with the third. It's this weird structure. The way it's written, nobody can. You can't accidentally write a song that way. You have to sit down and really make that work. It is a masterpiece of poetry to make that work in the right meter and finish in the end and be able to sing it. And Charlie Daniels wrote that by himself. And that's impressive.
You
I don't
rest
care
your
you
case.
Are. That's it. Like, wow. I'm sorry.
Wow. You're like a beautiful mind.
Step over saying, here to the chalkboard.
Take that, Steve Goodman. That's the best country song of all time.
Do you ever, Robert, do you ever interview David Allan Coe?
Oh, yeah, many times.
What's your thoughts on him?
He's a strange dude, I'm telling you. You don't want to get too deep. I went out. He had Ruskin Cave out in the wilds of Tennessee, where he had all his biker cohorts out there, and he had this big old biker festival every summer. And you'd go out there, and there were all these women who were mysteriously attached somehow. And
What are you saying?
Like Siamese twins?
No. Attached to David in various, whether they were his wives or his sisters or his daughters or his girlfriends, he was screwing them all.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
So
It was a big thing, and it was kind of scary and kind of fun.
So, all right. Robert, I think you really fit in there, didn't you? You walked in and said, hello,
The thing with David, though, is underneath all the outlaw tough guy thing, is he is kind of a big baby. He's kind of a whiner.
Really?
Yeah. He's like poor me. He's kind of a poor me kind of guy. After you get through all of the macho jive stuff, he's kind of a poor me person.
Well, I know that
if you think about it, you never even call me by my name. That is kind of it's kind of that thing. Yeah. Look at me.
I'm around as long as you will let me.
Yeah.
Well, I know that.
You know what? His son has a great podcast, Cocaine and Rhinestones.
Is that David Allan Coe's son?
Yeah, that's David Allan's son.
Wow. That's like the number one country music podcast.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's all the scandalous stories.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Jeez, stop listening to ours. Go listen to that. Unless you have some good scandalous stories.
Only after you've listened to Children of Song.
My Children of Song.
What is your podcast about?
Children of Song is about, there's about 35 episodes out there. It's people who were children who became stars or the children of stars. So it's Tanya Tucker. It's Lori Morgan and Jesse Keith Whitley. It's Vince and Jenny Gill. It's Carly Pierce, who was a child performer. Anybody who is like that. Lee Bryce was influenced by his mother, who was a gospel singer. So all these people who grew up surrounded by music and who grew up in it, kind of like, they are the subjects of Children of Song. So, you know, John Carter Cash.
Do you find that the kids who are already, that are growing up in that environment already, do you find that, I'm trying to figure out why artists are so weird. Are they weird because, is it kind of the chicken or the egg kind of thing? Are they already that way?
Does the weirdness make them?
No, here's my theory. My theory is they're all addicts, and they are addicts to applause. When you get finished screwing the bolt on the car seat in the car factory, nobody claps for you. But when you get done singing your song, everybody claps. So it's a job where you get applause, and they have to have that.
So it's a big, giant dopamine hit.
I think so. You know, think about being on the road and what a lousy life that is. It's really, the food sucks. Your accommodations are no good. Your travel arrangements are horrible. You're traveling all the time. You're away from your family. And why do you do it? Applause. That's why you do it.
Well, and money, usually.
Money and
applause. Not always. No. There's people out there on the road who aren't making beans.
Yeah,
and they still do it.
That's right.
And they still do it.
Think about it. We all know people who were never worse and are starting to push some big numbers in their age, mm-hmm. and are still out there trying to, quote, make it.
That's true.
Because, like you said, it's like the Lady Gaga song, you know, I live for the applause. I think that there's something in them.
Jimmy Dickens got on that Opry stage and told the same joke every Saturday night for 50 years, couldn't sing a lick, and still was out there, still doing it. And so when I was working on Brenda Lee's book with her, we were out at the opera, and she looked at Jimmy Dickens, and she turned to me and she said, if I'm out there at that age doing that, please hit me over the head with a club. It's like...
Well, isn't that part of the agreement, though, with the Opry? Don't you sign on basically for life?
For life.
It's like Hotel California.
It's one of those things. It's the way up and the way down. It's the bell curve.
Jeannie Seeley's great line is, I knew who to screw to get on the Opry. Who do I have to screw to get off it?
She just clocked 50 years.
I love Jeannie. I love me some Jeannie.
50 years.
She will say anything. She really will.
Is there an artist that you thought there's no way they're going to make it and they ended up being a huge success?
Oh, many. In fact, some of the biggest. I never thought Jason Aldean would be as huge as he is.
What did you not see in him?
He wasn't cute. He didn't sing that great. He didn't write. I mean, I didn't get it, you know. I still don't get it, actually.
I think Jason has the everyday kind of vibe for guys. I think he's kind of a guy's kind of guy.
Cole Swindell, you know.
Okay. See, but Cole does write those songs, and they're great songs.
Yeah.
You know.
But he's not a great singer.
Cole? He's a good singer.
Yeah.
Listen.
You heard him without the studio trickery.
Hey, we had a group of people come in. Do you guys remember that? I forget what was that?
No. I know. Wait, before you go on, Robert, you were attached to this at one time.
Oh.
It was Nashville Star.
That's Nashville right. Star. I discovered Nashville Miranda Star. Lambert when I was a judge. That's right.
So we were.
Oh my God. This is going to be a great story
this
for
is an
you.
Awesome story for
this
you.
This was like not season one or two. I won't say which season it was.
It was one. It was the first.
No, we're talking about what happened here.
Oh, what happened here.
Our storm. So they come to Patrick and they said, well, you take it from there.
Well, so they're going to bring in all the contestants at this point. It's like down to the final 10. I'm like, yeah, we'll have them all come in because it was still kind of, it was a big deal. I'm like, yeah, let them come in and sing a song. And it was one act that came in and I'll say the pronoun. She could not sing. She could not sing.
She started in the studio and she had a player because she couldn't play the guitar either and started to sing. Now, you guys were filming. They were filming, them doing interviews, radio stuff, that kind of thing.
Right.
She gets into it and stops because we're taping it. She goes, can I start again? Yeah, of course. I'm sorry, you guys. That's fine. No, listen, it's nerve-wracking. I get it. I understand it. It's hard to perform. Boom.
Especially to be thrown onto the radio.
Still, she shouldn't have gotten that far.
Anyway, it gets way worse, Robert. Hold on. And so she, a third time, tries, and then she says, do you guys have auto-tune?
And this was before people knew what, this was 2000.
They all use auto-tune.
Yeah, but like this was before people
before it was
knew
widely,
what auto-tune
before
was.
The average person
yeah, before the average
knew
person had
what
ever
auto-tune
heard
was.
This was before T-Pain did an app. We were like,
what?
No.
You need auto-tune to sing live?
To sing one song?
And you're on a singing competition show?
Right.
I think that's an automatic lose.
She did not make it. But there are a lot of people who use inline onboard auto-tune in concert.
Oh,
and,
I know.
And
I
you'll
know.
Hear it sometimes. It's got
there
a
are people, if their magic voice box fixer isn't working, won't go on. They can't sing without it. You know?
Do you know of an artist who did that?
I'm not saying. I'm not naming any names.
Okay.
Look, I was.
Don't say name. Hold on. I want to see this.
Oh yeah, write it down and then
for Bubba. Just pass us all.
Yes. Robert, you got it.
Bubba's good. He won't tell you. I will say while he's doing that, I was at a amphitheater.
Oh yeah, I knew that one. Okay.
Which one is it?
Amphitheater with 20,000 people.
I'm guessing.
And
that's exactly what I was already thinking.
Oh my God, it's this story I was about to tell. Yeah. I was in an amphitheater of 20,000 people, and this mega star artist was on stage, and I heard the auto tune correct it. And I went, oh, well, that was kind of obvious. And I looked around, and nobody cared. Either they didn't notice or they didn't care.
You know what, though?
I don't think people care anymore.
It's not just the ones that don't sing well that they use it on, they use it on everybody. I mean, Martina McBride does not need auto-tune. She sings perfectly, but they still do it just because to make the record even more perfect.
Make the record.
Yeah.
But not in concert.
Use it live.
But not in concert. No, she doesn't use it live. Yeah. The only artist I know of that refuses to have anything to do with that technology is Trisha Yearwood. She will not use it even in the studio or on the road.
Well, I mean, listen to her.
Yeah.
Why should she?
Right. Yeah. All right.
But I think most of them are fine without it. I feel like they don't need it, but they kind of say, well, but just in case.
Just in case,
or someone near them goes, hey, you know, you should, and they convince them. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it
takes the natural
There is a weird thing.
This is why I was so glad to come to town when I did, because I got to know those legends who, when they, you know, the Marty Robbinses of the world, when they walked the earth, who really did not have that technology and didn't need it. You know? Because back in those days, you couldn't be a star.
You know, they asked...
unless you could stand and deliver.
They asked Owen Bradley what it was like before Auto-Tune, before he died, you know, when... Patsy Cline didn't need auto-tune. She went in there and she hit it in one take, just like that. And he goes, no, she didn't. No, that was like 37 takes, you know, of her singing and killing herself to hit it perfect. You go, now we'd have got one take.
That's not always true, not for Patsy. Patsy took two takes to do Crazy. But still, in those days, here's the other thing about when Giants walked the earth.
She took
those
two,
records,
two,
when
two
you're
takes.
Listening to an Elvis record, or these people, those you're listening to a live performance. Everybody is in the room at the same time. Mm-hmm. The whole band is there. The singer is there. The backup singers. Everybody is there. You're listening to live records when you're listening to those classic Nashville records, a Patsy Cline record or a Brenda Lee record or a Marty Robbins record or a Johnny Cash record. Those are live performances. There's no technology doctoring anything. And everybody's in the same room.
Yeah, they weren't doing multi-tracks and overdubs and all that kind of stuff.
No, there were no overdubs. You know, everybody was in the same room at the same time.
And there is a magic that comes with that. When Riders in the Sky would come in and they would, the whole getup, which is great, and they would set up around all these microphones in here, and they would start to play, and you got one guy doing sound effects of a horse, and you got one guy doing crickets or whatever, and they start doing this whole thing. Man, it's my favorite. People go, who's the favorite? It's not Garth. It's not Tim. It's not Jason. It's not Martina. It's not
Luke.
None of them. It's Riders in the Sky. They are the best performing group ever.
I saw their very first show ever.
You saw, really?
Yep.
When
Wind
and
in
where?
The Wind in the Willows nightclub on State Street in Nashville. It was right the street behind Elliston Place where all the rock clubs were. And Doug was working. I said Doug Green, a Friday mm-hmm. guy, was working with me at the Country Music Hall of Fame. That was my first job in
Ranger
Nashville.
Ranger Doug.
Ranger Doug was with me. And he became one of my first friends in Nashville. Because when I moved here, I knew no one. I did not know one.
How did you get here?
The Hall of Fame, the Country Music Hall of Fame, was looking for a person with a library degree that had an encyclopedic knowledge of popular music. And I went, that would be me. And so they hired me. And everybody who used that library was a writer. And I read what they wrote. And I went, I could do that.
Can we actually back that up a little bit? Because when you, it might sound stupid, but when you went to go get that job, where was it advertised? How do you find out about
that
job?
I was there doing research for the Women in Country Music book that later became the CBS TV special. That book was what brought me to Nashville to do the research for it. And while I was there, I found out they had a job opening. And I went, that's the degree that I have, and I grew up in the music business with my grandmother's record shop, and I have every single record ever made, and so hire me.
And they did.
And they did. And then all the writers who were using that library to write their books and articles, I went, I could do that, and I got the job at the Tennessee, and 3 months later, USA Today started, and I went from never having been in a newspaper office to being in the national newspaper, and then the country explosion happened with Garth and Vince and everybody happening at the time. I was just in the right place at the right time. And then television doors opened because of the Women in Country Music special on CBS. Wow. And I started being a regular on Crook and Chase, and then I started doing all this other jive.
You know how I was introduced to you was when CMT would do the countdown specials or the big, what was the greatest duet or the greatest this? Right. And they'd have experts who would pop in and just talk about each one. And you were one of those guys.
I'm always the talking head.
Yes, you were one of those guys who would just pop in and have something very smart to say.
I still do that. The Academy of Country Music special that they do at the Ryman every year, they always use my talking head in that.
Then the
Nashville Star happened and all that other TV junk. And I had no intention of being on TV ever. It just... my brain
you
got in the
seem,
way.
You come off as a person who knows a lot of stuff.
Very knowledgeable.
Come off very knowledgeable.
Sometimes wise in the ways of country music.
I sometimes surprise myself. I'll go down to the record collection. I'll be fooling around, and I'll pull out like a Def Leppard album, I stuff the stories in the records. And I'm going like, you interviewed Def Leppard? I don't even remember it. You know, it's like there's so much junk that I've
Here's the deal. If you got Def Leppard stories offline, I need to hear them. Yeah, Carson is my favorite band ever.
The only thing Carson loves more than Garth is Def Leppard.
Yeah. There you go. Pour some sugar on me.
Just said he doesn't remember interviewing them.
I know. That's I feel like that's burned in my brain.
How many times have you seen Def Leppard?
Oh. Close to 50.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No.
I was going to say I've probably seen him 5 or 6 times.
Oh, no. I did 18 shows in one tour.
And how many Garth shows now?
30. 31?
So you're way behind.
Okay, well, Garth was also gone for 20 years.
That's right.
Like, cut a girl a break. So,
Robert, do you like going to concerts?
I like clubs. I'm a clubs guy. I like intimate club experiences. I was there when the Bluebird Cafe came to be, and those kind of things were always my thing. I covered concerts for 20 years. I had to go to them. So I've seen everybody but God with a backstage pass. But, yeah, I there are a few. There's a handful of performers that can make an arena seem like a club, that can make it. Garth is one of them. Tina Turner. There are just a handful of Springsteen. You know, people that can make you all feel like you're together in one
Prince was
body.
Like that.
Yeah, there's not many of them. I mean, I've seen every hair band in the world. You know, Poison, White Lion, everybody. And they're, you know.
Have you seen Stryper?
I've seen Stryper. I've seen them all.
I'm sorry.
Hey, dude, we love Stryper.
No, Baby and Bubba love Stryper, Carson.
I've seen,
not so much.
I have seen Kiss 9 times. I don't even like Kiss.
Kiss is terrible.
What?
Kiss is terrible.
Oh, you're hurt, Carson.
Running away. Ugh.
Kiss is so overrated.
But it's a good
show. I get the club
they
thing,
were entertaining.
Though.
They
yeah,
were
it's entertaining.
Entertaining.
First
I say
off,
it every time.
They worship Satan.
What? Oh, come on.
Oh, my God. Are you my Aunt Betty? What are you talking about?
Right?
Knights in Satan's service.
Oh, my God.
I thought it was kids.
No, a friend of mine trademarked that to make clothes out of it because Gene Simmons couldn't. Because Gene said specifically that was the only Kiss thing he couldn't trademark because people would have believed the lie that they were into Satan. They're not at all.
Have
really,
you seen,
Love Gun?
Have you seen Ozzy?
Yes, I've seen Ozzy. In fact, I was a monk in the Ozzy stage show. They had us march on stage we're taking these with cowls, you know, over us, you know, with these candles, and we had to go, and walk across the stage while Ozzy was doing, I forget what he was, burning something or doing something.
How do you get roped into that?
Right?
Like, okay, well, we're going to have you guys do.
Pantera. Have you seen Pantera?
Let me think if I've seen. I surely have.
Iron Maiden.
Yes, definitely. Iron
Slayer.
Maiden. Slayer, yes.
Megadeth.
I want to go to a Slayer concert with Robert K.
Do you know that Dave Mustaine of Megadeth lives in Nashville?
Yes, because his daughter is trying to do...
Wait, the dude from Megadeth's daughter is trying to do country?
I got an offer to interview her, and I'm not going to lie. I was going to be like, can you bring Dad?
Like, absolutely bring Dad.
Yeah, can you come on and we'll talk about it?
Well, in fact, there's a song that she wrote that he sings with Megadeth and that she sings in her folky country manner.
Yeah, Elektra Mustaine.
Yeah, Elektra. You should get them to do it with their two different versions. You know, play the Megadeth version and then play her version because it's the same song in radically different forms.
Yeah, just a smidge, I bet. Yeah.
Have you interviewed, that's a good one for your podcast. You could get Dave Mustaine and his
daughter. I've asked for them, actually. They're on my list, yeah.
I'm
still trying to get Winona, too. I want to get Winona on.
You know what I think would be interesting is, we kind of have had him, but we've done it separately. We've had Thomas Rhett and, of course, Red Akins.
They're on my list, too.
We've had them do some stuff and just kind of, we've talked to them individually about both sides of being the dad and also being the son.
There's several. I want Radney Foster because his daddy was a country musician and he grew up with his dad's band. There's not Radney Foster. What am I saying? Rodney Crowell. Not Radney Foster. Sorry, Radney. Rodney Crowell's on my list. There's several that I haven't gotten yet that I know, are going to be great.
I mean, Hank Jr. being a strange case of, I mean, he was very young when his father died and he was forced into it from a young age and all that. And then Thomas Rhett being the only other one. Is there someone else I'm forgetting?
Holly Williams, Hank Jr.'s daughter, was our very, very first show, and she was great.
But I'm talking about that have achieved...
That level
of success
of Hank Jr.
And Thomas is obviously
Pam Tillis
very successful.
And Mel.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah. She was
Lori Morgan and George Morgan. You know, yeah, there's been.
But
some.
I feel like
Carlene Carter was as big as June Carter in her day. You know.
Okay, I feel like there's something to be that you don't have that hunger and that struggle of being, you know, because you grew up the child of. Whoever. I think there may be something to that why we don't see, because it's like athletes, I mean, it's genetic, you know, that's why you have guys whose fathers play football.
Music is genetic too.
Of course it is. Yeah. But I'm saying the reason some of those people aren't as successful is because they don't need it as much, or they're pushed away from it by parents going, "Don't do this,"
or they're not as good,
or you know,
or they're better, and their parents are jealous.
I don't know of any like that.
Do you like Hank Williams Jr.?
I was a huge booster of Hank Williams Jr. I thought that this industry did not pay him the respect he was due. When he was packing auditoriums and had that rabid fan base and was just killing it on both on records and in concerts, this industry, it took years for them to finally say, okay, you're the entertainer of the year. And he was.
And he was. And he won it five times total. And you know what?
Yeah.
You say they didn't give him his due?
They
still not in the Hall of Fame.
That's
it's
right.
The most. And when people try to tell me egregious absences from the Hall of Fame, it's offensive to common sense that they name names in front of Hank Jr. Fine. Dottie West should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't disagree with that statement. But if you really think she should be in the Hall of Fame more than Hank Williams Jr., you're wrong. And I'm not even mincing words on that. Jerry Reed should be in the Hall of Fame. But they put him in last year in front of Bo Cephas. Are you kidding me?
You'll get no argument from
Hank Jr.
I'm a huge Hank Jr. fan.
How many decades? It's 5 decades?
Oh,
that...
no. He started in the 50s.
No, 60s.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when he was a little tiny kid. As a tiny kid, yes. But as a recording artist in the 60s, yeah.
So, can you... I mean, do you know some of the I kind of know. It's politics. It's attitudes. It's people just
or
don't like, you
it's,
know.
He'll get there eventually, and we're not in any hurry. You know, there's that feeling
on
some people.
Oh, my fear is that they're going to do it, and it's going to end up being posthumous, and it won't be.
Yeah. Just awful.
You know, and he needs to get his due. I mean, the guy has, he's paved the way for so much. He's still influencing people today.
Oh, absolutely. When I interview young artists today, he's one of the ones they always mention.
Oh,
Waylon, too. It took a Waylon a long
time
to get
Chris Jansen, half the songs he's written because he was listening to Bo Cephas, and he's like, I was inspired, so I went and wrote.
Right.
But how many songs name drop Bo Cephas or Hank Jr., you know, in hit songs? I think I went back a couple years ago. I found like 10 or 12 number one songs that name, you know, drop old Bo Cephas on a jukebox.
I'll tell you who else sticks in my craw. Tanya Tucker. Just because she's a bad girl, she can't get in the Hall of Fame. She's our bad girl. You know, she deserves it. In the list of the women who have had the most top 10 hit records in country music, she's number 6. And she's the only one of those 6 that's not in the Hall of Fame.
How bad is she?
Tanya? In her day, she was pretty bad, but she's all straightened out now. But
I hear stories, and I don't know if they're true or not.
Oh, she was a wild child. She was totally a wild child.
She's still a wild child.
No, not so much anymore.
I don't know, man. We had her in the studio a couple... Well,
that was 10 years ago.
I love Tanya. I love her. She did the podcast with her daughter, Presley Tucker, who sings great and is on the road with her. And so when Tanya would sing the podcast, they sing on the show, too. They don't just talk. They sing their little bits of their song. When Tanya and Presley sang together, it was like the Everly Brothers or something. It was so perfect. I mean, their voices rang off each other beautifully. And Presley singing alone was great, too.
Oh, I saw another one, Leanne Womack and her daughter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Aubrey has a record deal. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic.
Aubrey won't do the Children of Song show because she doesn't want to be associated with Leanne Womack.
I know, and she came in.
Which makes no sense because they obviously love each other very much.
I know.
It's not like there's a weird thing with them.
She won't do the show. She won't do Children of Song.
I mean, she...
And the other one I'm having trouble with is, I got her eventually, Allie Brooks, Garth's daughter. She came to do the show, and then she said, is there any way we can do the show and not mention my dad? And I went, no.
You
just need to own it. You know, you just need to know who you are and own it. Nobody's ever going to say Allie Brooks without saying who her father is. It's just like, and I just basically gave her a Dutch uncle speech and said, you know, you just need to like know who you are and own it. Don't try to deny it. Don't try to run away from it. Just make it be part of you.
What about Toby and Crystal?
Crystal did the show.
She did.
Mm-hmm. And did great.
She's super cool.
She was very cool. And she didn't have a guitar player with her, and she sang a cappella on the show and was note perfect. She was really good. And the other one who was note perfect without a guitarist was Georgette Jones.
Really?
Tammy and George's daughter. Sounds just like her mother. Sounds fantastic.
Wow.
Funny you say no one will ever mention you, but, you know, when Thomas Rhett came out, it was all about, oh, you're Red Akins' son. Oh, you're Red Akins' son. Mm-hmm. And they actually did a video.
But now nobody does that anymore.
No, it's the opposite. People go up to Rhett and go, aren't you Thomas Rhett's daddy?
Exactly. Like,
it's gone. He's kind of
Well, we had
it.
The same kind of thing, but it was on a brother's side with Josh and Charles, the Kelly brothers.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, whenever Lady Antebellum first came out, it was like, oh, Charles Kelly, you're Josh Kelly's brother.
Yeah. Right. And now people do that to Josh.
Yeah.
Right. Eddie Montgomery and John Michael was the same way, too. Because you're John Michael Montgomery's brother. And then 5 years later is like.
John Michael Montgomery did the Children of Song with his son, Walker Montgomery, who is doing the same circuit of those clubs up in Kentucky that both Eddie and John Michael.
Yeah, he's kind of poised to possibly break out. And that's a guy we might be playing on the radio.
Walker Montgomery, yes, remember that name.
In the future, yeah.
He sang great on the show.
I think it's so hard to make it, you know, in this business. And to break out into being on the radio and people knowing you and doing big shows, man, that's...
It's getting through the eye of a needle. It's so hard. The odds against you are stacked so high. I remember I talked to a little group of students up in Jolton, Tennessee, and this little African-American kid walked up to me with his demo tape, cassette at that time. And I had just given this big speech about how difficult it is and how hard it is and how few people get through and this and that. He still walked up to me and I said, didn't you listen to what I was saying? Don't you know what the odds are against you? And he looked me directly in the eye and said, somebody's got to be the next Michael Jackson, and it might as well be me. And I went, that is the right attitude.
Give me that
tape. The one who breaks through.
Let me
see that
tape.
Did that kid become the next Michael Jackson?
Not that I know of.
Was he good?
I never listened to it. I'm sorry to say.
That poor little child.
I just went right on living my life. She got it. There's a Forgetting Sarah Marshall reference. Oh, I was gonna do that, and then I just went right on living my life.
Well, somebody made a comment. I forget which artist it was who said, if you have a backup plan, do that. Because it was, if you have a backup plan in place, then that's the job you should do.
Exactly, because the ones that make it don't have a backup plan.
Yeah, that's it, because it's literally all or nothing.
Exactly.
And even that doesn't guarantee you're getting anywhere.
No, and sometimes it your life takes a strange turn, like David Lee Murphy, who I've known since he was a club act. You know, eventually the hit stopped coming and he just transitioned into being this songwriter for other people and having a great life at that. And for 10 years on he went writing songs and now he's back.
I'll tell you who is a great example of resiliency, and that is Jimmy Wayne.
Yes.
Jimmy Wayne came and was, he was working in the prison system and singing. And he was, he was... living in the foster care system.
Yeah, he was in the foster care system for years. At one point was living in his car.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then gets a chance to do a demo and sing Sarah Smiles. Mm-hmm. And to the record label, they loved him, started pushing it. He had how many hits? Three?
Yeah, see, three. I love you so much.
But you know what? His fans are rabid. You go to a Jimmy Wayne show, they know the words of even songs you've never heard of.
Yeah.
He is one of those artists that the audience connected with him in a very special way.
When he started that walk.
Yeah.
He walked across the America, part of it, for most of it, and to raise awareness for foster kids and foster care. I was like, well,
why are you doing this? This is like
the third song had just come out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how are you? Because what you don't know is like they have to push that song to keep it going. So they've got to do interviews and shows and free shows.
And calls and play my record.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be walking in, across Memphis or whatever.
I have to say, when I had him on Children of Song and I had him sing Sarah Smile on the show, I understood completely why he got a deal.
Oh, he's an amazing singer.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
By the way, podcast number 121, it's basically just Jimmy Wayne telling his life story.
Which is amazing. Like, there's stuff
on
that podcast
we've ever done.
It's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, you have so much of a respect for the guy. More, music aside, yeah, sure, he's a great singer. But the guy that Jimmy is pretty crazy. What podcast again?
121.
But he walks across America, does that thing, and then loses his record deal within, 6 months or less.
Yeah, something like that.
And And Borchetta just basically kind of moved on. And I was like, well, surely he'll get another deal. I don't think he ever got another deal. But he turned around and said, you know what? I'm going to do a book to document what happened. And then he's, I'm doing a children's video thing. Plus he's still doing music. That's a guy who...
He's written a couple books. And then they did a TV movie about...
Yep, that's right.
About Paper
the
Angels.
Paper Angels. It was... I mean, I just think he is so... He's one of those guys that reminds me of Craig Morgan. Craig is one of those guys...
I love Craig.
If Craig said, hey, man, you're not going to have a singing career anymore, he'd go, okay, cool. And he would go do something else, and he would be great at that. He is not...
That guy can sing.
But he is not... Yeah. But he's not just this. He's also this and this and that and this and that and this.
Craig is really good at basically everything. You're right. He would be... Whatever he decided to do, if they said music is gone, whatever his next thing is, he would be great at it.
I mean, I've like actually found that to be true of many artists, that they're not just good at one thing. They're often good at multiple. They're often... What do you call them?
Multidextrous.
Multidextrous.
Something like that.
Not a real word.
But like Steve Warner is a painter, you know, and a really good one, and a guitar player, and a songwriter, and a singer. You know, they do a lot of things.
So the creativity flows very easily.
I find that, you know, some of them do magic tricks that you do, you know, there's weird things
who
about.
Who does magic tricks? I want to know who does magic tricks.
Aaron Tippin's a pilot, you know. Yeah. There are all these people that do multiple things well.
God, I was hoping he said Aaron Tippin's a magician. No. I want to see.
Tell Robert the time Aaron took you up in the plane.
Aaron took me. We went in the.
You went
the
flying with Aaron Tippin?
Yeah, we went flying. But to get to. So his biplane at the time wasn't at his house. It was in
Smithville.
Smithville Airport. Mm-hmm. So we flew from his house, where he has a grass, field strip where you can just, oh God, I wouldn't do this today.
I was going to say, I wouldn't do that.
I got in this old.
I've been to that house and I've seen that airplane and there's no way I'd go up in it.
It's Yugoslavian, a Wilga, this old Russian Soviet plane that looked like it was made in the Soviet Union. It just, when you looked at it, you would go, is that Russian? Because you just knew it when
had
you
that
saw
look,
it.
Yeah.
It has that thing. I'm like, I don't think this is safe. And we got in it, and we go down to turn at the bottom of the grass strip to take off, and it's kind of at a lean, so we're kind of leaning like 30 degrees to the side, and fuel starts leaking out of something in the ceiling onto me, and I'm like... That smells like gas.
The fuel is stored in the wings, and it's just dumping out of the wings onto you.
Yeah, but probably shouldn't go inside the cockpit. I don't know. Right.
I was like, wait a minute.
That's bad.
Is that on us right now? He goes, oh yeah, but don't worry about it, buddy. Don't worry. That's just fine. You'll
don't smoke.
Fine. Yeah. Just don't light any cigarettes. You'll be fine. I'm like, what? That's no, it's gas. Are we gonna have enough gas to get where we're going? We take off, we go, and now we get in this thing where there's literally no I'm not inside anymore. If you had a little biplane. And like half of me is sticking out in the open air.
Like Snoopy.
And I've got this seatbelt that seriously looked like it was made in 1940. Because it was. And it's just this old piece of metal and cloth thing. And he goes, that'll hold you in. No, I don't think so.
No, that's just going to keep your torso there while the rest of you is burning.
So we go, and then he flips the thing and does the barrel roll just to prove we could do it. And we recorded the whole thing on the air.
No, thank you.
No, yeah, it was great.
No, thank you.
And then he goes, you want to fly it? No. Okay, because it was a stick. Like, I know they call it the...
A stick?
The stick. You take the stick. But this wasn't like... This was a stick. It was literally just... It looked like...
A piece of wood?
It was a piece of metal with a rubber thing on the top, and it was a stick.
Yeah,
I don't want to fly anything that I have to fly with.
You
got to
remember, Aaron, after high school, his dad made him go fly at least an hour and do aerobatics. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, his dad was a pilot too. Yeah,
his dad was a corporate pilot, and Aaron was too. He was a corporate
and
guy.
One of
for
his
a while.
Sons going to become an
airline guy.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think the last time I talked to him, he was
Teddy.
Doing Teddy and. Yep. And he also sings. Is it Teddy that sings?
Yeah, Teddy sings.
Yeah. That's okay. Another one that you could have on your
podcast. I did
podcast.
That for a bit. What's the weirdest thing you ever did for a story like that? Like flying with Aaron Tippin or what?
I rode the elephant in the circus parade, but I guess everybody's done that.
No. Sure.
That's the only animal that could hold me.
Let me think about this for a second. I went target shooting with bow and arrow with Gary Morris, and I went gun target shooting with Hank Jr.
Of course. That's like in my on my bucket list right there.
And I hope y'all are just drunk.
Actually, no.
Drunk.
We were on camera.
Shooting stuff with Bo Cephas would be the greatest thing ever.
I think shooting stuff with Bo Cephas is now just the been best. Added to the top of my bucket list.
At Hank Jr.'s place.
I didn't know that was an option.
And there's probably like some big bald eagle just on top of a tree just, while you're shooting away and just.
Or you're shooting into the pond.
Tammy Wynette has made me breakfast. I've had breakfast with Johnny and June in their kitchen.
Wow.
And Johnny in his bathrobe.
Dude, that's so crazy. What are you doing? Wait, why are you there?
Why are you there? And why is he in a bathrobe?
I was out there to see June. June had a book out. She had just published a book, and I was out there to interview June, and we're sitting in the kitchen drinking coffee, and here comes Johnny down the stairs from the bedroom in his bathrobe. And she goes, honey, do you want some breakfast? And so we have...
Awesome.
Yeah? What did you have?
Eggs and bacon and, you know, toast, the
typical,
usual, typical stuff.
Black coffee, I'm assuming.
Yes. Well, that's the only way I drink it. Once you've worked at a newspaper, that's the only way you'll drink coffee, believe me.
It is black.
Well, you don't want to put that powdered junk in
that's
it.
That's awful.
That's all they have.
Which is the worst. Like
that's all they have in newsrooms. It's like...
It's the worst when you get cold coffee and you try to put that powdered stuff in it. And you're like,
and it clumps.
It does. Yeah, it just clumps and it's just horrible.
Hey, Robert, where do people find you? What's the best way to direct people to you?
Me personally or the podcast? I mean, childrensofsong.com is where the podcast is.
Childrensofsong.com.
Children of Song. Or at iTunes or Google Play or TuneIn or Stitcher or any of the, wherever you get podcasts.
Yeah. Right.
Are you on Twitter or Facebook?
I have a Facebook page, yes. Oh, you can find me on Facebook.
And it's just Robert K. Orman?
Yep.
And you spell your last name.
The secret is you have to know how to spell my name. This is why I'm in the phone book, because nobody can spell it.
O-E-R-M-A-N-N.
Two N's?
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
You're in the phone book? Like, who knows you're in the phone? Who knows what a phone book is?
Whatever that is. I mean, I'm listed, whatever that means.
Can I remember having to go and get unlisted? You guys remember doing that?
I don't remember going to get unlisted because I never lived anywhere long enough to where it mattered. I mean, I literally,
life in radio.
In 6 months I would be in another city and I wouldn't be in that book anymore.
Hey, I remember getting a phone call one time. From a listener who called me at my house.
Oh, I've gotten that many times.
And I said, hello, Big D? And then I'll meet, because nobody I know says Big D.
Well, when you write record reviews like I do, which can be pretty pointed, let's say, in Music Row magazine every week, and their fans find you, you can get some serious death threats.
Oh. Never, and something we'll say right now is never say anything bad about Carrie Underwood. Because if you say something bad about Carrie Underwood,
you know that
her people will attack.
That's
you.
A good warning if you've never experienced that.
I don't know
firsthand.
That Carrie's ever gotten a bad review. I'm trying to think if I ever gave.
Oh no, it doesn't. You could just say something not even.
I
bad.
Said something one time. It wasn't even. I mean, it was just it was me trying to be funny.
After the flood, by like 4 days, she's calling in to talk to us. She's not even in Nashville. She's in L.A. or somewhere. And she calls in just to do a regular, once a month or so call-in type thing on the show. And what you called her?
I called her Carrie Underwater.
Yeah.
And we're trying to raise money.
Yeah, we're in the middle of the flood. I've got a foot of water in my basement.
Yeah, yeah.
All this stuff. And people are like, oh, my God, that's the most insensitive thing you've ever
shut
done.
It.
I can't believe it. It was by the hundreds. There are hundreds
like,
of them.
They were calling our bosses and making threats. And
I was like, when I'm surrounded by disaster around me and I'm having to do it and I'm in the middle of the muck trying to get stuff cleaned out for people where you're having to clean all their house out and the all that. And it's not just
taking out all the drywall.
2 days. It goes on for months.
Yeah.
Then you can come back and what have you done? What have you done besides get on there and be snarky to me?
The thing is, especially with that, social media, people are very brave.
Yes, they are. They will say things online on social media that they would never say to your face.
If and that should be a rule. If you feel that you could not say it to my face, then don't say it.
Well, this is my rule on Facebook, too. I never friend anybody on Facebook who I wouldn't have lunch with.
That's really good.
I'm not blanketing everybody in the world to be my friend. I don't want that. I want people that I would actually spend FaceTime with.
My personal Facebook page is, I think I have 200 friends on it. And it's all people. It's either family or people I went to high school with, or, you know, somebody that I've known for a long time.
I know every songwriter in town, so I have a lot more than that.
Well, it's different. That's, you know, you use yours in that way, and that's fine. Mine is where I go, and I post pictures on there so my mom can see them.
Well, I've been in town a lot longer than you have, too. I've been in town for 40 years.
Oh, I've been requested by some really cool people, and I'm like, no, man.
Oh, my gosh. Are you guys having a little...
No, I'm saying. What I'm saying is...
I know. I have songwriter friends. Oh, I have important people too.
My thing is to say it's okay to say no sometimes, because, you know, we have to.
That's true. Yeah.
You've got to draw a line
somewhere.
From
work, from other radio stations or other radio people send stuff to me, I'll go, whatever, and I'll accept it. But Bubba, if he don't know you, like really know you, no, he doesn't accept it.
I friended you this morning.
What's that?
You. I friended this.
Oh, yes. He accepted my friend request.
That's cool.
So apparently we're going to have lunch together.
Every once in a while, I'll see somebody.
With me?
Yes. Liquid lunch. Yeah.
Listen, you've never been more entertained than you have.
Are you a whiskey drinker?
Anything.
Oh, well, then you guys will have just a big old time. Fine.
The only thing I won't drink is tequila. Tequila makes me crazy.
I drank tequila. The last time I really drank tequila, I was in Cancun with Jason Aldean, who we talked about earlier, and Dustin Lynch. And it's one of those places where they just give you tequila.
I thought the last time was whenever you were with Kip
in Jamaica.
No, it was in Jamaica. We were drinking rum. You don't drink tequila in Jamaica.
Gotcha.
Tequila's a Mexico thing. Party foul. Well, no, we're on this resort in Mexico, and all you have to do is go, Mas tequila, Pedro, which was his real name, by the way. It wasn't just a slur that I was using to refer to the waiter.
That was his
name.
That's
the only thing I knew how to say in Spanish at the time was Mas tequila, Pedro. And guess what? Every time you would say that, Pedro would bring you Mas tequila, and it didn't cost anything. It was free.
I would have been out of my gourd.
2 o'clock in the afternoon. We didn't know what was going on.
We called Patrick when he was in Jamaica. And it was day one. Now, what we didn't know was that he hates flying. We knew that. But he had taken...
I had taken two Xanax, one before each flight. I hadn't eaten all day. I hadn't slept. I got to Jamaica, and they started immediately giving me drinks. So they woke me up at 5 o'clock in the morning the next day when they're live on the air, and I was completely out, just like...
That's the best.
Oh, and you also, and I listened to this tape recently because we were looking through stuff for our
best of.
Our best of, and I listened to this tape, and it was, you had some lady called in and told you that I needed to leave Jamaica because a hurricane was coming.
Yes.
And then you had her call me. So I answered the phone, and it's this woman I've never met.
Patrick.
Going, Patrick, get out of there.
There's a storm coming, Patrick. Get out.
Oh, man.
He's like, hello? What?
I do have Patrick saying bye.
Oh
yeah,
that's right.
Drunk, drunk Patrick hanging up. Here we go.
Okay, good. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Robert, it's
okay, good. Okay, good. Bye-bye.
It's so good to have you in, man. I hope you get a chance to come back, and you're just delightful.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
And you can go find Robert on his Facebook page, I guess, if you want to do that.
He also writes for MusicRow.com.
Yes, right? MusicRow.com. Yes, so. My column's there every week. In fact, today, Thursday, which this happens to be a Thursday, that's the day my record review column appears. The other column is called Bobby Carl Works the Room, and that's me going to parties needing free shrimp and all the celebrities I saw there.
Oh, that's cool.
He once even mentioned that he saw me at a party.
Wow.
Yes, Patrick.
That's when I knew I had become... sort of somebody. It's because I had gotten
when Robert recognized.
That's right.
Yeah.
He recognized that I was at a party and wrote it in the column. I was like, I'm in.
Wow.
Robert, thank you. Robert K. Orman, everyone. Check him out online and keep up with him. Thank you again, man. We really
thank
do appreciate
you, buddy.
It. Anything
appreciate
else, Bubba?
Yes.
Baby Shark.
No!
Baby Shark.
The podcast is sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Auto Parts.
Oh, yeah! That's O'Reilly Auto Parts. That works.
Take us out of here. Take us out of here.
Bye, y'all.
Baby Shark.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.
Okay, good. Bye-bye.